is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's something quietly unnerving about a murder trial just hitting the brakes. Not because of a bombshell witness or flipping the script or a forensic report suddenly rewriting the timeline, but because of the very machinery of justice that has to stop and ask, can this man even stand in the room and face what he is accused of? That's the spot we're in right now with Brian Walsh. Just 2 weeks shy of jury selection in Norfolk Superior Court, Judge Diane Fournier dropped the hammer this week. Trial delayed. Walsh headed straight to Bridgewater State Hospital for a 20-day psychiatric evaluation to nail down one razor-sharp question. Is he competent to stand trial? This guy, remember? Anna Walsh, his wife, dead New Year's Day a couple years ago. Then all the Google searches. Remember the Google searches? Yeah, he's the one with the Google search, the bad. How to do this, how to do that, how to inherit, how long to inherit, every which way to dispose of things. Yeah, he's that guy. I couldn't have possibly done it. There's, you know, literal fluids in the basement that weren't just bought at Home Depot. He did buy a bunch at Home Depot, but fluids from Anna. It's not about guilt or innocence. It's about the shadows of that New Year's morning 2.5 years ago. It's about whether in his moment or in this moment, he can wrap his head around the charges, talk strategy with his lawyers, and step into the box without the whole thing crumbling on appeal. And that's important. People go, well, you didn't put a try him. Well, appeal is a big thing. You don't want to have this drag on for decades. Not in anyone's interest. So if it means an extra 20 days and we're going to slow this down a little bit, if that saves us 3 or 4 years, then so be it. We're not good as human beings at going, what's going to be best for us in the long run? No, we're very much now. That's not always the best case scenario. It's never usually the best case scenario, and it certainly isn't in the legal system. The original start date of October 20th, well, it is pushed indefinitely. The competency hearing is locked in for October 27th in a final pretrial conference that was queued up for Tuesday. It's bumped just like everything else. It's not a curveball out of nowhere. It's the kind of pause that the system builds in to protect its own integrity, rooted in that old Supreme Court benchmark from Dusky v. United States back in 1960, where the bar is clear. A defendant has to rationally understand the proceedings and play a meaningful role in their defense. Is this a scheme? Is he acting? Could be. But that's why 20 days in the mental health facility is going to give us that answer. And if courts could say, well, Lori Vallow's competent, I think the bar for Brian, I think he'll pass. But let's take the 20 days, shall we? Massachusetts law spells it out even tighter. If the judge spots any whiff of doubt, they can order the eval at any point, no questions asked, and the threshold and preponderance of the evidence, just over 50% likelihood that he's not fit. That's a lower hurdle than the beyond a reasonable doubt standard we toss around for convictions. If the docs at Bridgewater tip the scales towards incompetence, the trial freezes. Not dismissed outright, but delayed until he's patched up, maybe with therapy, meds, whatever it takes to get him courtroom ready. Worst case, if restoration drags on forever without a civil commitment path, the case could evaporate. Up to 40 days for the full poke and prod if 20 isn't enough. But let's not kid ourselves. This lands heavy in a case that's already a masterclass in slow burn tension. Brian Walsh, who's now 49, sits accused of the first degree murder, dismemberment. Yeah, that's in there too. And improper conveyance of the remains. They didn't even find her yet. These are the charges. And they probably never will. It's all tied to the disappearance of his wife, Anna Walsh, on January 1st of 2023. She was only 39, a rising star in D.C. real estate, the kind of woman who juggled luxury listings and cross-country commutes while raising 3 boys under 7. Kind of an amazing lady. That morning, in her Cohasset home, a sleepy coastal spot south of Boston where The salt air mixes with the illusion of small town normal. She texted Brian a quick good morning around 6 a.m., updates a friend on her plans, then radio silence. She tells police she later kissed him goodbye, grabbed her bag for the train to the Capitol, but those messages, they don't bounce back. There's no check-ins from the station, no work bings, and by evening, the quiet turns sharp. Well, because she didn't send those messages. That's Brian, allegedly. Walsh doesn't raise the alarm right away. Instead, the next morning, January 2nd, he's out running errands. Surveillance from Home Depot in Abington catches him at 2:13 p.m., dropping $450 on tarps, buckets, drop cloths, hacksaw, cleaning solvents, and more. You know, spring cleaning, January 2nd, it's what you do, right? Back at his house, on his six-year-old son's iPad, a string of searches lights up the screen between 4:55 a.m. and 9:15 a.m. Can you be charged with unaliving without a body? 10 ways to dispose of if you really need to. Is it better to throw crime scene clothes away or wash them? Because I really, really like this shirt. I got an Aeropostale. It's a good one from The Gap. I hope I can still wear it. Lime and disposal. What happens if you throw a in the lake? Can you throw away certain parts? Forensic pathologists, the ones who sift through these digital trails in a case like this, call this pattern post-event rumination, not blind panic. But a calculated scan of the map, like someone testing the exits before bolting. It's the mind's way of stacking bricks against consequence, one query at a time. And it doesn't stop there. Trash pulls from a nearby transfer station turn up a hoodie with Anna's DNA. Stained gloves, bags matching the Home Depot haul. By January 3rd, friends and family are circling. Walsh's Fields calls, spins a yarn. She's in D.C., buried in meetings, maybe dodging some federal heat, echoes of his own skeletons rattling. But at his employer, a top-tier brokerage, sounds the alarm on January 4th. No sign of her since before the holidays. Walsh decides to file a missing persons report that afternoon. Oh, people are starting to get on you. Better do what you should have done 4 days ago. Cops show up around 7 o'clock. He hands over her phone records, walks them through the texts, cooperative. They note no obvious mess in the house, but the stories don't line up. No frantic blasts to her contacts. No real worry in the timeline. January 5th brings a tip from a friend. Anna had squirreled away $35,000 in cash at her parents' place out of his hands after he'd asked her to grab it on New Year's Eve. Tension, financial knots tightening. January 6th flips the switch. A basement search uncovers blood splatter on the stairs. Flex in the concrete, a broken wine glass. Out back under the leaves in the woods. Kitchen knife. Handle wrapped in duct tape. Blade crushed, or crusted rather, with blood. DNA seals it. Divers hit the queries and ponds from those searches and nothing. No body, no full closure, but Massachusetts doesn't need the remains for a actual charge, a murder charge. A circumstantial web holds pretty strong. Her blood in his space, his buys for cleanup, the lie stacking like cordwood. The January 8th, the arrest starts as misleading investigators, escalates by nightfall to the big three felonies. In Quincy District Court the next day, prosecutors read the sentences aloud like exhibit markers. Walsh, in an orange jumpsuit, face down, pleads not guilty. His lawyer calls it premature. House of cards, right? From there, the case settles into a procedural crawl, the kind that wears down everyone, but reveals the fault lines. Held without bail in Norfolk County Jail, grand jury indicts him on the 30th of 2023, and Norfolk Superior Court formalizes it. Judge Beverly Canone bows out early over a minor conflict, hands it to Fineri, just five Superior Court pit stops that year. Bail denials, discovery tussles, mental health whispers that go nowhere. Walsh's past creeps in via filings. That 2021 federal wire fraud conviction where he'd peddled fake Andy Warhol sketches and other counterfeits. Charming victims online for $300,000 plus in restitution owed. Probation for 3 years, tethered to Massachusetts. No travel without nod. Prosecution, weave it all in. He killed to dodge a violation. Saw Anna as the loose end. Defense pushes back. Circumstantial smoke, no fire. Then 2024 drops a parallel hammer on February 20th. The federal judge in Boston sentences Walsh to 37 months in prison for the art fraud. Up from probation after violations piled up, plus 3 years supervised release, and that restitution ballooning to $475,000. It is a separate beast, but the overlap stings. Deception as the through line from canvases to covenants. Murder case, idols, more. Continuances from experts, phone data scraps, and his colleagues, printer affidavits, driven, dressed, sharp the last day. Phone always humming. Her family, Serbian immigrants who fled the Balkan Wars, speaks in measured heartbreak. The father, Ninad, says she was our spark, the one who chased dreams across oceans. And her brother, David, said, stepping up for the boys, now 8, 6, and 3, fielding the unanswerable whys. Fast forward to 2025 and the docket finally hums. Motion stack defense clause for records on State Trooper Michael Proctor, the lead investigator. Canned in the Karen Reed acquittal fallout. Text biases the works. They're looking for it. They're hoping it could taint here too. They argue even if his fingerprints are light, prosecutors parry. Minimal role. They move along. Filings fly on bad act evidence. Fraud, as for a bit in backstory. Witness statements from Anna's friend, Tracy Miner, curbs the opinion testimony. Trial set for October 20th. Jury pool summoned. Witnesses braced in a change of venue. Bid flops. And the media buzz was too hot. Jail conditions too dicey, they claim. The momentum crests. Then on September 11th of 2025, Norfolk County Jail, at 9:55 p.m., the lights out in the pretrial pod, an inmate lunges at him, stabs Walsh in the head and neck. Non-life-threatening for the sheriff's office, but enough for an overnight hold to Beth Israel, deaconess in Boston. Patched him up. He's back by dawn. No charges on the attacker. Chalked as isolated, but for the defense, it's dynamite. Affidavits start rolling in. They hit very hard on what was left. The years in custody already fraying nerves. Now this trauma tipping him into withdrawal and disorientation. He's not eating, not sleeping. They swear, can't strategize, can't focus. Add in the late-breaking DNA. Retests from the state. Potential Proctor bombshells still buried. And the venue gripes. It's a cocktail for doubt. The judge doesn't spill why the flags were waved. Law shields that. No public autopsy of the trigger. Could be courtroom vibes, though. Erratic nods, scattered talk, a blank stare at counsel, or the filings alone sufficed. Either way, she acts on the motion because the statute green lights it. Prosecutors don't fight the evaluation. They just nudge. They keep the pretrial wheels turning where you can. But once the order hits, well, medicine trumps law. Walsh ships out to Bridgewater that day. A fortress of forensic hospital, 100 beds of high security, psych care for the courts. No fluffy couches here. Teams of clinicians, psychologists, all drilled in their dance between mind and mandate. They'll run the gauntlet, interviewing, probing, orientation, cognitive batteries for memory and logic, hypotheticals on plea deals or testimony, screen for faking it too. But lingering, a red flag in these spots caught by inconsistencies and symptoms. Underlying culprits, trauma from the stab, custody crush, maybe echoes of fraud, stress, or mental fractures. Not the crime sanity the crime's sanity. That's a separate insanity plea. Miles off. Just today's fitness. It's rigorous. Because the fallout is very brutal if they botch it. Plus a fogged defendant to trial, push him there. Well, it's a constitutional foul and reversal bait. If you let incompetence slide, victims' families twist longer in limbo. Stats and forensic hubs like Bridgewater show most, around 80%, get resolved eventually. But it's no quick fix. Weeks can turn into months, updates to the court every 30 days if committed. For Walsh, 20 days max for the report. But could extensions lurk? Is he competent? I go back to the docket. Maybe winter of 2026, next year, kickoff? Not? The treatment ward is where he's at now. The trial's on hold. The evidence shelf life is going to be tested. What will happen to Brian Walsh? What will those 20 days tell us? Well, that's what we're going to find out. Is this all an act? All an act to get away with taking out his wife? Accident, on purpose, whatever it may be. That's the question. We'll find out. The clock is ticking. We're more than 20 days in. Tell me what you think is going to happen in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not already there, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to find us. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.